When I say Michael Douglas, you can probably hear his voice in your head from one of his signature roles.
Greed, for lack of a better word, is good. Greed is right. I don't know what you're up to, but I'm going to tell you it's going to stop right now.
No, it's not going to stop. It's going to go on and on until you face up to your responsibilities.
What responsibilities?
You have made me the happiest piano player who has ever lived.
Just a few of the dozens of films Michael Douglas has done. He was honored last week by the Betty Davis Foundation and the Boston University Howard Gottlieb Archival Research Center with a Lifetime Achievement Award. I spoke with him after a montage of his films and started by asking him what he thought, looking back.
50 years. It's a joy, you know, it's how you spent a good part of your life. I'm very happy. I love my work. And I like the balance, the mix.
Are there roles that you see yourself doing there that it was a question of whether you would do them?
Yeah, well, there are ones that were more dangerous, let's say, in terms of the outlook, the kind of gray area, which I seem for some reason to be attracted to. I look back and without any real purpose, my entire career has been pretty much contemporary. I only have, I think, one period picture out of about 60 that I've done. Maybe it came out of I was in college in the 60s when the Vietnam War was going on, and we all of a sudden got into a period of that gray area. And so I've always been sort of attracted to that mix, that there's a degree of larceny in all of us, but the hope and belief that we'll do the right thing.
Well, and there are films that you have done, a number of them, that have been certainly current, but also influenced the thought of the time. I'm thinking of Wall Street, of course.
Right.
Unfortunately, you didn't fix the problems on Wall Street with that movie, but when you do a film like that and people are talking about it and it changes the dynamic of the moment, do you feel that it has a bigger impact than you thought it would when you decided to do it?
Well, that one was sort of a challenge, and we were very proud that we kind of captured the zeitgeist of that moment. But that was one where, yes, I get identified with that the most, and people love Gordon Gekko, you know, and if I get one more drunken Wall Street guy coming up to me, you're the man, you know, yeah, you're the man. I said, hey, I was the villain, remember, I went to jail. Ah, right. Oh, no. And so all of a sudden you realize that I thanked my costume designer. They liked the clothes. They liked whatever it was and didn't see through. So, I mean, that one sort of surprised us all.
Well, what is it about you that even when you are the villain, you're a likable villain, that the audience can identify with you?
Jeremy, I think you hit upon my biggest advantage, my biggest thing. And I was not clearly aware of this until we were doing Fatal Attraction.
Yeah.
And we had our first screening of Fatal Attraction. It was right after my first scene where I have an adulterous moment with Glenn Close. And I came back to my apartment, and there's a scene where I get in the bed and I take the sheets and blankets, rough them all up to make it look like I've been in the bed that night. Mm-hmm. And the audience laughed. And the producer, Sherry Lansing, turned to me and said, I can't believe that they've forgiven you already. And I have been blessed with, I guess everybody has their element that people will let you go a long way and allow you to get away with a lot before it's too much.
Well, the other thing about you, and I say this as somebody who works in radio all the time, is your voice is
right.
Amazing and still is. I mean, I was watching a clip that was from the 60s, and you had it then. You had this voice.
Well, I had a little bit in the 60s, because I was always taking, I did this television series, The Streets of San Francisco, mm-hmm. and my first awards were in Germany, because the show was syndicated around the world, and I went over to Germany to get this award for the show, and I thanked the audience and everything, and also I could see these whispers in the German audience going, was ist das? Was ist das? And then I went and saw Streets of San Francisco, Nostrasse, San Francisco, in German, I had this great profundo, this great German, this great deep, deep voice. I sound like a little wimp when I'm sitting there, you know.
Do you have to take care of it?
Well, I took vocal lessons before Wall Street, actually, was when I did some work on my voice. You know, since then, I've had cancer. cancer of the tongue and in the throat. My voice has changed, but it seems like it's holding up okay.
So that brings me to another thought that I had when I was thinking about that is, my father is a classical pianist, and he has always been very worried about his fingers. He, like, if you dropped a $100 bill on an escalator, he would not get down and pick it up because he doesn't want anything to happen to his fingers. When you were diagnosed with tongue cancer, that must have been a very, very scary thing for you.
Well, yeah, you could say that. We presented as throat cancer because I was stage four, and the likelihood of having your tongue removed is not the best thing for an actor,
right,
or for anybody for that matter. And so we didn't like the connotation, so we thought we would, change the interpretation. That's always, any cancer survivors know, and you're happy to be here. And I actually lost two friends who had similar cancer at that time, and was very grateful to have behind the candelabra after that.
So you're in a new show on Netflix called The Kaminsky Method, which people should watch if you haven't already. The show, is about aging.
Yeah.
What drew you to that at this moment?
Chuck Lorre wrote the show, and it's a comedy about getting older. Well, I said, if you can find anything funny about getting older, I'm your man. let's do this. And so it was a beautiful written pilot, and I hadn't thought about it at all at this time. But this streaming phenomenon, which is really this Silicon Valley having come into Hollywood and taken over in a very, very short period of time, is fantastic. Because, streaming has no commercials. You can say anything you want. And basically, I can do a season in the amount of time it takes to do one feature film. And that's what attracted to me. All of a sudden, it was a part that was age-appropriate and dealt with issues of older people, hopefully in a humorous way in most cases.
Well, somebody dies of cancer in the first episode.
Very funny.
Do you prefer to do a character that is not based on a real person or a character that is based on a real person?
Woo. That's a good question. I pick everything based on the material. I think it's the advantages of being a producer, because when they offer me a picture as an actor, I read the script, and I think, that's a good movie, man. That's a really good movie. It moves me, it makes me laugh, this and that. I don't worry about the part. And then I'm looking who's around me. Who's the director? Who's the cast? And I would much rather have a little part in a good movie than a big part in a crappy movie.
You've won two Oscars, one for producing and one for acting. Producing One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, acting for Wall Street.
Right.
What made you want to produce in the first place? Because it's something that a lot of actors now do, but you were doing it when that wasn't the case as much.
It was solely by chance. I was fortunate enough that my father had owned the rights to the book, had it adapted into a play, and then afterwards he had tried for a few years to get it made into a movie. He couldn't. I had started my career after college, was working, was sliding into episodic television, and I heard that Dad was selling the project. I said, look, let me try to run with this, and I'll get it set up for you to play the part. Mm-hmm. And I tried for a few years, finally got it set up, and by that point, time had gone by. My father was a little older. Of course, he's never forgiven me for this. And I understand it. This is one of the great parts in your life. But it was the passion for that project. I loved that story and had the opportunity.
Your father's 102 now?
He'll be 102 next week.
Wow. He'll be 102. So... Yeah. Was there an intimidation factor for you in following in your father's footsteps?
Oh, yeah. Well, I had no interest in acting. It was the 60s. I was in Santa Barbara, California. I was a hippie. University of California, Santa Barbara. Finally, I think it was my third year, they called me into the chancellor's office. I was a junior, and they said, you have to declare a major. Huh? Yeah, you got to declare. You can't keep taking general education courses. You got to declare a major. I said, I don't know, man. Maybe theater arts. I figured my mother was an actress and my dad, but I had no interest, so I came to it reluctantly. And I wasn't very good. Dad was the first one who came up to see those first shows. You know, you were terrible.
Really?
Yes. Well, I mean, he rightfully so. I mean, our union runs at about 90% unemployment, and I think he was very worried after what he saw. And so I was a grinder, and I just kept at it. But yes, of course, anybody else, a father and son business, but in ours, someone would say, that's just like your father. And you're trying to create your own identity. So for me, that year of it was a kind of a combination of Fatal Attraction, followed coming out 2 months later with Wall Street, and winning the Oscar was a big moment for me, because I really felt it was the first time I was outside the shadow of an extraordinary career, an extraordinary man.
Michael Douglas, thank you so much, and congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you all for listening. Thank you all. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Our conversation as Douglas accepted the Bette Davis Lifetime Achievement Award.